This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, here's how Miro works. See? It's amazing.
What's everyone doing at David's desk? Ever since marketing started using Miro's collaborative online whiteboard, he thinks all our other teams should sign up. Why?
He says Miro's making his meetings disappear. And if every team gets on it, that means even less meetings. They're using Miro for brainstorms, mind maps, customer research.
So could we use Miro instead of having another 100 meetings for every round of feedback? Yep. You can comment, react to ideas, even leave a recording on the board.
And what about presentations?
There are Miro templates for that.
How do you know so much about Miro?
I've actually been using it all along. I just used a Miro board to plan the best vacation.
Okay, I'm on board.
See how Miro users save up to 80 hours every year by meeting less and doing more. Get on board at Miro.com with 3 boards free forever. That's Miro.com.
Welcome back to the Leading Edge podcast. I'm Richard. I'm flying solo this week as Rob has had a little bit of an issue with that pesky COVID. Look, he's filled in for me plenty of times on this podcast, so it's long overdue that I do the same for Rob this week. So I'm sure you'll join me in wishing him a very, very speedy recovery. Rest up, buddy. This week, it's all about baz-ball cricket. Yeah, okay, all right, I apologise. I'm never saying that word again. Maybe. We've gone wild at Headingley. We had a great test at Trent Bridge. We've had an amazing series against New Zealand, but this is a brilliant test series win this week. Test cricket does not stop there. We're going to see India and England finish their series from last summer. Coming starting on Friday. We're going to touch on that at the end of the pod. But first, we have some massive news about a certain England legend, Owen Morgan. It's expected, we're recording this on Tuesday, it's expected he will be announcing his retirement from international cricket today. Huge news, isn't it? 35-year-old, he took charge of the T20 side back in 2012, one day side in 2014, went to skip the ODI side to this amazing 2019 World Cup win, whilst also reaching top of the rankings in both formats. He's a legend. It's as simple as that. He's going to go down as one of the finest captains that's ever played the game. Record-breaking 225 ODIs, 115 T20s, and finished his career as a leading run scorer in one day and T20 cricket for England with 6,957 and 2,458 runs, respectively. Not forgetting, he also played 16 tests for England. They only scored 700 runs at an average of about 30, which is damn good today. With a lot of the players we've had, 200-350 was best of 130 coming against Pakistan back in 2010. The reason he's stepping down, he struggled for form and fitness in recent times, including not scoring a run in his last two innings in the recent Netherlands series. Yes, that was amazing, by the way. I've got to touch on that a little bit. But it should be remembered what an unbelievable job he's done over the years. As I said, he's arguably the finest captain we've ever seen in white ball. Injuries as well is an issue. He can't seem to get himself right. And I think he's just accepted that if he's not got the form, if he's not playing as he should be in this team, and he doesn't deserve a place, he has the self-respect, whatever you want to call it, to just step aside. And I think it's really admirable what he's done. It's the right thing to do before the shouts of him stepping down are shouted too loudly. So unbelievable record for him. England will face India in a three-match T20 series starting 7th of July, following just after the Test match that's coming up. Shortly after, there's going to be a three-match ODI series. T20 World Cup in Australia. So you did expect that he would see it through to October. But it is what it is. And like I say, I do really respect what he does. Josh Butler, he seems to be the overwhelming favourite to replace him in both formats. But Moeen Ali, maybe he's also a candidate. Be really interesting to hear what people have got to say about who they think should be the replacement. Although saying that, by the time he's announced his retirement, they may well have already announced who's going to be the skipper. So it might be null and void. But it'd be really interesting to know what people have got to say about who they think should replace him. But for me, it's Josh Butler, and it's Josh Butler's time to shine in white ball cricket alone. Much like the Test side with Stokes and McCullum coming in, Bazball to start a new era. New England white ball coach Matthew Mott. He's going to begin a new era, isn't he, with his new skipper. So it couldn't be a better time in a lot of ways as an England cricket fan. We believe Morgan will continue to play in the 100 competition. That's what we're hearing. But you'd also imagine he's going to be really in high demand on the white ball circuit, mentor, coach over the coming years, thanks to all his international exploits, experience in the IPL, etc., etc. So credit to Morgan, a great career, and it's great that he has stepped down at the right time. He's created and established that positive and winning culture around the teams, hasn't he? Influenced by his good friend Brendan McCullum, who's obviously now doing that with the Test side. England have no shortage of quality players either, established in the setup or coming through. And you'd imagine Morgan would be very, very proud of where he leaves the white ball setup, and so he should be. Right, let's get on to the Test match. Headingley, what an unbelievable event this was. Just stunning, stunning cricket all through this series against New Zealand. And we've got to say, after an incredible second Test fifth-day run chase heroics by young Johnny Bairstow, or sneaky old Johnny Bairstow, and Ben Stokes, who secured the series win, England then moved across to Headingley, where we continue to see this England team play this wonderful, positive and exciting brand of cricket under Stokes and McCullum to secure a third consecutive fourth innings victory, this time knocking off 296 for 3 wickets to secure that 3-0 series win. They just keep knocking these scores off of it as if they're chasing 120. It's ridiculous. Skipper Joe Root was unbeaten at the end alongside that man Johnny Bairstow, who hit the winning runs with a very, very fitting 6 into the stands to claim this 7-wicket win for England. Just superb. Let's still delve into it. So day 5 was delayed due to rain, with proceedings getting underway at 1:30 p.m. But by 2:35 p.m. the game was over. Ridiculous. They opened the gates again like they did at Lords on the 5th day, like they did at Trent Bridge on the 5th day. Obviously rain meant they didn't get the full house like they did at Trent Bridge, and yeah, but it was still worth it, and still worthy effort from the ground. New Zealand did think they may have an opening when Ollie Pope was removed first over the day for 82 after he and Root had put on a quality 134 in the 4th even that really broke the back of this chase, made it look very, very straightforward. Johnny Bairstow, on the back of his incredible 136 off 92 on day 5 at Trent Bridge, and then his imperious first innings at 162 off 157 in this game, joined Root and the pair just rattled along, making short work of the remaining runs. Root finished 86 in the night, while Bairstow smashed his way to 71 of just 41 deliveries. It is ridiculous. This is Test match cricket we're talking about. This is unheard of, the way England are playing at the moment. He hit the second fastest 50 for England in Tests in the process of just 30 deliveries. What more can you say? Worth noting as well, Ian Botham, ITV, he's got the quickest 50 for England still, 28 balls. Back in Delhi in 1981, he did also have the second as well, I think 32 balls, but Bairstow snuck in there. He's in a little Botham sandwich at the moment for his fastest 50s. Another stunning performance to chase down a score of 296 as if it's nothing, especially on the back of that 277 chase at the 4th innings at Lords and 299 at Trent Bridge. It just seems a daydream, doesn't it? Last summer, when this relatively similar England team refused to chase down a Kiwi score on the final day, instead allowing Dom Sibley to basically have a net in the middle. This England team is built differently now, just totally differently now as fans, and I'm sure we are all absolutely loving it. So let's get ourselves through the Test match. We've not got Rob to bounce in and give me his stats because he loves his stats, but we'll do what we can. I'll run through it, and hopefully this is a nice little summary for you. But in this game, New Zealand saw the return of skipper Kane Williamson, and they decided to go into the Test with Bracewell as one of their 4 main bowlers, which Ajaz Patel carrying the drinks. Wowzers, we'll get on to that. Bolt, Southee and Wagner also record Wagner in for Matt Henry. You've got to say New Zealand have got to rue that decision, haven't you, with the way they saw Jack Leach bowling with his 10-wicket haul in this performance, man of the match performance. Jack Leach was bowling in the first hour of this game, and they went in with Bracewell on a pitch that looked from the start that it would take some spin. Poor old Ajaz Patel, that's all I can say. England's only change was to give a debut to Surrey, a big, quick Jamie Overton, Joverton, as is now forever going to be known, in place of Jimmy Anderson. And Overton earned the call-up on the back of some really lively and aggressive bowling display so far this summer. And obviously the injury list of England quicks, that's as long as my arm, and also included Jimmy Anderson in this test. Really nice before the test, though, wasn't it, that we saw Craig Overton, who's also in the squad, didn't play in the series, but has been in the squad for the whole time. He presented his brother with his first cap. And I did see somebody say that it's probably Jamie Overton has probably just retired Craig Overton from Test Match cricket. So hopefully that's not the case, but good on Jamie Overton for getting this opportunity. So Kane Williamson chose to have a bat. New Zealand put up 329 with that man, Daryl Mitchell, once again performing brilliantly for his 109. The man just scores runs. Tom Blundell, his partner in crime, also continued his fine series with 55. For England, Jack Leach, as we've said, 10-wicket game for him. He was a star performer with the ball. You heard me right, a star performer with the ball. I was critical of him after Trent Bridge, and I think rightly so. He's bowling very, very flat, very negatively. It looked like he bowled with a hell of a lot more guile, more flight, just something different. It's clear that people are working on him in the background and he's responding very well to whatever those coaching points are. He took for 5 for 100 in this first innings off 38.3 overs to record his first ever first innings, 5-wicket haul, and his first 5 for in England. So that's just a superb, superb achievement. Like I said, he was bowling inside the first hour. Stokes has got faith in this man. Broader 3 for 62 and the very economical Matthew Potts 1 for 34 off 26. David St. Jamie Everton took 1 for 85. He bowled Devon Conway off his inside edge to give the big man his first test wicket. England reply got off to an absolute shocker. It's as simple as that, isn't it? They saw themselves down to 21 for 4 when Root departed, 5 for 55 when Stokes was dismissed, soon after Folks went for a duck. Folks did not have the test match to remember. It was then time for Johnny Bairstow and a certain Jamie Overton. Jamie Overton's in the team for his batting, the bowling, but he can bat. He's a better batter than his brother, and he bats at number 8 in this England team, and he did brilliantly. The pair batted superbly, rebuilt the innings, putting on a superb, unbelievable 241. Johnny Bairstow got to his 100, but Overton was just dwelling in the late 80s, early 90s on the evening, wasn't it? And he just had that feeling if he didn't get his 100 that evening, could be opportunity missed. And that's exactly what happened. He was removed for 97, just 3 runs short of a debut 100 early on day 3. Really heartbreaking stuff for him, but it was lovely to see how Bairstow ran over to him and really kind of just encouraged him, just saying, what an achievement you've just done. Embrace this, enjoy this moment. You've done brilliantly. You've just scored 97. But it's wounding. You look at his stats. He scored 97, but in his stats, there's just one in the 50 column. That's it. It doesn't say anything else. But well battered, Jamie Overton. Bairstow just continued doing what he does. Smashed his way. 162 off 157. Just unbelievable form Johnny Bairstow is in at the moment, and he just can't seem to miss the ball. Stuart Broad also had some fun hitting 42 off 36 as England took a lead of 31 into the second innings. With the ball, New Zealand got a great start, obviously, but lack of frontline spinner on this deck really, really did take its toll. Bolt, I think he's been superb all series. He bowled beautifully again, taking 4 for 104. Southie, 3 for 100, and the new man in Wagner, 2 for 75. But just a stunning batting display for England, considering they were 55 down for 6 wickets. So in second innings, New Zealand, they overcame the small deficit, didn't they? Put together a solid 326. Tom Latham finally waking up and coming to the party after a really, really poor series for him. He got 76 at the top of the order. Kane Williamson looked pretty good for 48 before Potts got him again. That's what Potts does. He's got him at least 3 times in this series. And then it was the pair of Daryl Mitchell and Tom Blundell who once more came together to put on their fourth 100 partnership of the series, with the New Zealand player of the series, Daryl Mitchell, scoring 55 and Blundell top scoring in the innings with 88. Leach then took his second 5-wicket haul of the game, 5 for 66. To go for a 10 for 166 in the game. That's maths right there. I can add 166 together. No problem. Rightfully claimed the Man of the Match award for this one, even though there was obviously some stiff competition from the likes of Bairstow and Root, etc. Potts got himself 3 for 66, whilst Overton got himself another wicket, 1 for 61. Root with the man with the other wicket. Shows you how much it was spinning. We got 2 spinners in this one. England had to overcome the issue of Ben Folkes as well. Said he didn't have a test match to remember. He got a duck in the first innings. And then he tested positive for COVID. Johnny Bairstow did take the gloves for the evening while they were in the field. But then Sam Billings made another motorway dash, as he did in Melbourne, in Australia. To dash, didn't he? About God knows how many hours down the A1 road in Australia as his replacement. And this one, he had to dash up from London. Got there in the early hours of the morning, apparently, but you wouldn't have believed it. Great to see him get a second cap. After winning his first cap, we did worry a little bit that might be one and done for him, especially with folks coming in with Bairstow still around and clamouring for Butler potentially to come back in at some point. But really good to see him get that England shirt on again. Main contribution for Mr. Billings, apart from his usual great energy and really tidy glove work, was a great thigh catch to remove Wagner. Club cricket at his best. We love that. Top stuff from him. This all set up the 296-run target, which England made easy work of. But New Zealand did make early inroads, removing the England opening pair of Lees and Crawley. Lees run out by Crawley. Got to be said, it was run out by Crawley. Crawley, that was his call. He just seemed to just watch the ball and wasn't really sure what he was doing. Lees got himself halfway down the track before he was run out. Lees got a Jaffa in the first innings of the game as well, so he couldn't really do much about either of his dismissals in this test. So on paper, it looks like he's had a bad test match. But I don't know what he could have done with either, to be fair. Crawley went off looking pretty good, and it's really frustrating that he did get out quite early. He got 25 off 33, but he went to a horrible shot off the spinner Bracewell after he really was looking good, crunching those drives. But it was a bit of a nothing shot. It was a bit of a me shot from Zach Crawley, so I'm not going to criticise him too much. This brought Joe Root back to the crease with Ollie Pope, and they rattled along again. 134 partnership made the fifth day win look a simple task. Root did what Root does, whilst Pope made the most of this innings with 82 off 108 on the back of his second test 100 before he was removed first over on the day of day five. Really frustrating for Ollie Pope. It would have been great to see him get that second 100 and really establish himself in that number three spot, but it looks like he's done just about enough on the back of that 100 in the second test. And then this really, really important score shouldn't be underestimated. England absolutely smashed this chase, this 296 chase, on the eve of the fourth day. This Root and Pope partnership, this is what did it. Yes, we finished it in great style on the fifth day, but Root and Pope deserve a lot of credit. Bairstow, he was the man that obviously came to the crease when Pope went. New Zealand thought the door was ajar, but it was slammed shut in their faces. He whacked another rapid half century, we've said, to make the shortest of short work of this chase. And it really was fitting to see the Yorkshire pair there at the end. They've been the two star men, haven't they, for England? And they were there at the end to grab this test win at Headingley. Root earned himself England Player of the Series for his 396 runs at an average of 99, Bradman-esque. And it's just been wonderful cricket, hasn't it? We need to focus on New Zealand about what went wrong. But at the same time, England deserve all the credit in the world for how they've performed, for how they've responded to McCullum coming in, how they've responded to Stokes. And McCullum will sit there in the background, and everybody's talking so highly about how he communicates with them, with emotion, as Billings was saying, but not shouty, not kind of in your face. It's just very calm, but somehow with emotion. Difficult to understand, but I think I understand where he's getting at. Stokes obviously is delivering great messaging to this unit, and they are just confidence is just running through the veins of this team. So let's have a little look at run through the New Zealand setup just to see what went well, what didn't go well. And really, it's the batting, isn't it? You take away Mitchell and Blundell, and they're just not performing about openers. Tom Latham, Will Young, pretty good combination there. Tom Latham, captained in the second game, really experienced. Will Young's played a lot of county cricket. New Zealand expected and needed more. They ended the series of 121 runs at 20.17 for Latham, 133 at 22.17 for Will Young. 150 between them, and that was Latham's 76 in the final innings for New Zealand in this series. Only knock of note from him. Nothing else really from Tom Latham. Will Young, he had a good second test, two pretty good scores, but you know, it's just ordinary, isn't it? We're talking about England here. It feels like we're talking about England openers, and this is not what you'd expect from New Zealand, you know, World Test Championship New Zealand. As an opening partnership as well, something just was not working. Credit has to go to England with a new ball, but they were this partnership that was dismissed three times inside three overs in the series, the highest partnership of 84, with an average partnership for the first wicket of just 20.34. It really is like talking about England. Kane Williamson, he missed the second test with COVID. Obviously, he's the key, isn't he? The Root versus Williamson. This is how it would build beforehand, but it's just a non-event. First test, Matty Potts had him sussed. He went for 2 and 15 in that first one. Potts had him both times. He scored 31 and 48 in this final test and finished with 96 runs at an average of 24. If Kane Williamson doesn't fire, your openers aren't firing. Devon Conway, 151 runs at 25. More of the same, really. You're really putting yourselves under pressure. And this is, we're going to get on to Mitchell and Blundell in a second, but you've got the two openers and you've got your three and or four who haven't really fired in the series. And New Zealand have still put some decent scores up. So they've really batted quite well as a team in the end. And if it wasn't for Henry Nicholls missing the first test with COVID, is there a chance Daryl Mitchell doesn't play in this series? He was clearly the absolute star of this series. England have played brilliantly. They've won 3-0. But arguably, Daryl Mitchell has been the best player in this series. He's put up 538 runs at an average of 107.6. Yeah, better than Joe Root, including 300s and 250s, not out 50s, I must add as well. Finishing unbeaten twice. So a series unlike we have ever seen by this man, by Daryl Mitchell, and it stacks up against anyone touring England ever. Just can't be underestimated that. He's been absolutely superb, and he does look like my partner on this podcast, Bobby. It is. We've never seen him in the same place. Maybe that's why he's not on today. Maybe he's still travelling back from England after playing some cricket. We don't know. We need to look into that one. Tom Blundell, meanwhile, struggled with the gloves a little bit early on, but he did certainly improve throughout the series. But it's his form with the bat that was vital. He's got 383 runs at 63.83, 103 50s, but two of those 50s were nearly 100s, 96 and 88. So he's been superb. If he had scored himself another 16 runs, we'd have been talking about three centuries for him as well. Superb. As for partnership, they put on 724 runs whilst they were at the crease together for an average of 120.67 innings average. This is why every time we turned on the TV, when New Zealand were batting, Mitchell and Blundell were batting. That's why. 724 runs at an average of 120 per innings. I should have worked out how many overs they faced as well, because it felt like forever. Absolutely key, wasn't it, for them? And so real credit must go to them. Spinners. Let's have a look at the New Zealand bowlers then. The biggest issue New Zealand have had in this series, they haven't had a spinner. Ajaz Patel, let's just roll the clock back a little bit, 2021. He took 21 wickets, an average of 20.66 in three tests in India.
You will fail. So what? Everybody does. But your gym, your watch, your yoga pants, they pretend you won't. So when you miss a day, eat the pancakes. Give up on a workout? You failed? Seriously, what the hell? We're Body. We've been a part of that too, but not anymore. At Body, we're rejecting perfection and embracing reality. Not in a Pizza Monday kind of way, in a loving your whole life kind of way. In a, this workout is fun and it's okay if I take a week off kind of way. In an, I'm eating healthy and it's okay if I indulge kind of way. In a, I like myself no matter what kind of way. Yeah, you will fail. We all will. But we're not going to let that be the end. You see that? We're already making progress. So let's keep going. We are Body. Start your free trial at body.com. That's BODI.com.
Including a 10-for performance. 10 wickets in an innings. Not in a game, but in an innings. Overall, he has 43 wickets and an average of 27.65 in 12 tests. So why did he only bowl two overs in the first test and not play again? It just seems baffling. I know de Grandhon was injured, which is a big loss for the balance of this New Zealand side, and they wanted Bracewell in, who can offer a little bit with the bat. But this is baffling, especially in the third test when you look at that pitch before the toss was made. It was obviously going to take spin. It doesn't have the history of spin necessarily at Headingley, but you just had to make a better decision, Kane. The 22 off his two overs in that first test was perhaps a deciding moment of the series. He was targeted, wasn't he? 11 and over. Get him out of the attack. Get him out of the series. Who would have known that was going to happen? Michael Bracewell there did step in the second and third test. And we've got to say he looked okay in that second test, especially in the first innings. He took 3 for 62 on his debut performance with the ball. But he was targeted after that by the England batters. And he just does not look like a frontline spinner at this moment in time. An ex-wicketkeeper that's picked up and focused on his spin bowling over the last few years. It just doesn't quite feel like the right decision. With a bat, he got 96 runs at an average of 24. Very ordinary again. Very similar to Conway, to Kane Williamson. He didn't quite justify that selection. It's really good to see, I think they call him the beast. It was good to see him get his debut, get his opportunity. But I don't think he was used correctly. And there's a bit of a theme with that as well, isn't there? We're going to get onto the seamers in a second. And before I talk about the ones that played mostly, Matt Henry, he was being asked to bowl as an enforcer in the second test at Trent Bridge. This is not his strength. Wagner, if you wanted to play that role, and maybe they didn't know until during the game, obviously, but if you want someone to play that role and give you something different, you go with Wagner. You know, New Zealand just seems to be a bit scrambled. It really does feel like we're talking about England when we're talking about the selection for New Zealand. Obviously, different days for England. But let's get on the seamers then. Trent Boult, I think he was fantastic. I think he looked threatening. I think he's entertainment. He's box office with a bat. He's just a fun, fun player and just ultra talented. He can just get the ball talking. And when it is swinging, I don't think there's many better. Especially, you know, you look at that performance when he got in. You know, he was basically him that got England on the ropes in this third test. It's got to be said as well. I love the stat that he's now the record holder for the most runs scored by number 11 in Test cricket. I just love that statistic. And he seems so proud of it as well. So I'm proud of him. So with the ball, he was always a threat, wasn't he? He led the attack, 14 wickets at 28.93. Tim Southee, I'd say, struggled a little bit, 9 wickets for him, but it was at an average of 59 with a 4.3 economy. Boult was much better. Wagner and Henry both played just once in this series. There's arguments we made whether they could do that differently, I'm not sure. But in all honesty, Carl Jameson was a huge miss. He bowled well in the first test. He took 6 wickets at 27.5, economy of 3.4. He only bowled 3 innings, didn't he? Because he succumbed to a back injury that meant he couldn't bowl in the second innings at Trent Bridge. And then subsequently flew home and missed the third test. A big miss for him. And I don't think New Zealand quite got the heads around of how to replace De Grandhomme, how to replace Jameson, and really what to do with spin. I don't think they quite understood how to get that balance of the team right. And they'll admit, I'm sure, that they did not get it right. So really, apart from Mitchell, Blundell and Boult, I'd say everyone else in this New Zealand setup were very, very under par. But England did obviously make life very difficult for them. But as World Test champions, as players of that caliber, of world-class performance, you've got to perform better than that. You've got to. It's as simple as that. You know, it's a different day, I suppose, isn't it, in Test cricket with the way England have played. But you've got to be better. Simple as that. And it'd be really interesting to hear the New Zealand perspective on this one. Obviously, Bobby lives over in Auckland. He'll be able to give us a little bit of that insight, what the papers are saying, what the pundits are saying over there next time we get together and he's on with me. But yeah, just not good enough from New Zealand at all. Let's rattle through the England players as well. I'm not going to keep you all day today. But it'd be really interesting just to run through everybody and just see how they went and give it some context as well, because we will, like I say, wrap up with a little look ahead to India at the end of this podcast. And a pretty unchanged squad as well. So let's look at the openers first. Alex Lees, I think he had an okay series. It's a steady first test, but then he looked really impressive in Trent Bridge in the second test. He's got his first 50, 67, wasn't it, before he got off England off to a flyer, chasing down that 299 score with 44. He'd scored three boundaries inside the first 4 deliveries of that chase. That set the tempo. I really like Alex Lees. I did before he got his opportunity, and I think he's growing into this spot. Third test, as we said, he got a Jaffa from Boult. It happens. Boult's great. Before we run out by Crawley. Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? You're going to have one of those. He finished the series 169 runs, an average of 28.17. He certainly hasn't nailed down a spot, but he's definitely showing promise. Zach Crawley, what to do with a problem like Zach Crawley? He looks great. At times, he looks imperious. He just looks like a player. But 87 runs in 6 innings at 14.5 is not the best. 43 first innings of the first test was his top score. It went downhill from there. We're talking 44 more runs in 5 innings. He's nicked off to wicketkeeper, slipped 4 times, then bowled Boult in third test before a horrible shot to be caught off the off-spin of Bracewell, as we spoke about. He was looking good in that final inning. So he could have bookended this series with that 43 in the first innings of the first test, and he could have got a nice score, but he didn't. He got himself out. The big question for me with Zach Crawley at the moment is there anyone out there ready to take over the opener spot? Ben Compton is having a stunning year, but he's never done it before this season. You've got the likes of, you know, we've talked about Chris Dent. He's coming into form at the right time. Asib Ameen, Tom Haynes, Rory Burns, Dom Sibley. Dom Sibley scoring 30-odd like a snail in the recent game. What's changed? I just don't know who's out there that England are looking at and saying, yeah, absolutely. Harry Brook, do you open the batting? Fancy opening the batting, Harry? Who knows? Who knows what England are going to do? But for India, it's going to be Zach and it's going to be Alex Lees. We'll see what happens after that test. Ollie Pope at number 3, huge, huge question. We all questioned it. We all queried it. I'd say he's done really well. 86 in that final game. He got his first 100, 160 in the second test, scored 267 at 44.5. We can't ask much more of him, can we? Grew into the series, grew into the position. I think he's going to thrive under Stokes and under Brendan McCullum, giving him that confidence. Definitely something to build on. Joe Root, we don't have to say too much about him, do we? 396 runs at 99, exceptional. I don't think I've ever seen a batter who is more at ease at the crease than Joe Root. He just seems relaxed. How many times do you see him smile he just loves it. Maybe it's because he's using a good bunch of guys and he's having a nice chat. It's like playing a club game with your mates or something. I don't know. But despite, you know, 2021, he was incredible. And despite the stresses and captaincy of that, he just now looks so relaxed. We can definitely expect plenty more runs if this first series about the captaincy tells us anything. He's coming for you, Tendulkar. He's coming for your 15 and odd thousand runs test record, Tendulkar. That's all I'm going to say. But Johnny Bairstow, wow. Any questions that anybody may have had with him have been well and truly destroyed. Exceptional again. He started the series really slowly, so there was some questions building up, wasn't there, after the first test. 1-16 at Lords, and then 8 in the first innings at Trent Bridge. It was great to see that I would have liked to have seen him stay at 6, but it was totally understandable that Stokes went to 6 after getting the captaincy. Bairstow at 5, that's fine. Glad to see folks get the gloves. Bairstow, focus on your bat, and you've earned this opportunity in the last 12 months. He then explodes into life on day 5 of the Trent Bridge test with that epic 136. He's then hit 160 to 157. He's then hit 71 not out in the third test, second innings. He's a lock now, isn't he? Like we said, Harry Brook was the man in the squad. Harry Brook was the man that people were trying to find a way to get in this test team. With Pope going to 3, Root 4, Bairstow at 5, that middle order is locked down. Harry, I'd ask at Yorkshire if I can open the batting. Stokes, I think he captained really, really well. Looked in control when fielding, spoke well off the field, you know, before the game, after the game, after day's plays and stuff. He seems like he was built for this captaincy. It's not been overwhelmed by it at all. Looks in charge. Obviously, he's, you know, made an impact in the style of players, this change of mentality. It's not just McCullum. It's not just Baz Ball. It's Stokes Ball as well. And he needs to take a huge amount of credit for the way England have played and just completely, I don't want to say reinvented, because we've seen teams play attacking cricket before. For a start, McCullum's New Zealand. But he seems like he's just completely reinvented almost overnight how England approach test cricket and how they play it. And it just has been a stunning, stunning series. And Stokes really does deserve so much of the credit. 194 runs for him at 48.5, including the 75 not out to see England over the line at Trent Bridge, including that 6 that nearly cleared the Radcliffe Road stand. And if you've ever been to Trent Bridge or seen the Radcliffe Road stand, you'll know that that was massive. With the ball, he only took 3 wickets, but I'll be honest with you, I'm really pleased to see he didn't over bowl himself. 53 and a half overs he bowled in 3 games. Want to just work him back slowly after some of the injuries issues he's had. Ben Folkes, frustrating third test, but we can't talk much into that. Played really well in the second test at Trent Bridge, 56 and then 12 not out to be there at the end when we won. After seeing the team home as well, didn't he? At Lords, 32 not out in the second innings of that one. Decent series of bat, but I think he's been very, very good behind the stumps. And what's made us appreciate him a little bit more, I think, is how much of a struggle Tom Blundell had at times in really difficult conditions in England, at Lords and at Trent Bridge especially. Blundell was struggling, especially with that dipping ball. Folkes made it look so straightforward. That's the difference it has by having a great wicketkeeper. I've always wanted that in an England team, and Folkes is that man. And I think he's a fine batsman as well, and I don't want any conversations about Josh Butler for the gloves at the moment, okay? Folkes is in the squad. Although he's got COVID, he has got Sam Billings in the squad with him for India game. So we'll see if he does get through the protocols in order to be fit in time for that game. But we will get onto that shortly. Right, so a quick look at the England bowlers, though. They need the credit they deserve. We've got Jack Leach first 5-wicket haul in England and first innings in a test with his 5 for 100. Just superb. Second innings also, that 5 wickets, 10-wicket game. He's took 3 10-wicket games so far in first-class cricket, including a best of 1,202. So he can do it. And this is the thing. This is what England have wanted in him, seen in him. And it does seem like there is a lot more confidence. When Joe Root was captain, no criticism of Joe, but Joe didn't seem to really rate Jack Leach. That's the way I took it. He probably liked him. The setup liked him, but he didn't seem to trust or rate him. And whatever's going on behind the scenes, whatever's going on with his run-up, because I think he's shortened a little bit, whatever's going on with his flight, his delivery, he was talking about how he's still bowling relatively flat with pace, but getting a little bit more on the ball, a bit more drift, a bit more dip on the ball. And he has to do that. He can't just keep bowling darts like he did at Trent Bridge. It's a bit of a weird series for him, wasn't it? Lords obviously got the early concussion. Fielding meant that we saw Matt Parkinson that we'd all been clamouring for. Matt Parkinson won for 47 or 15 and a half overs. Jack Leach has now nailed down his spot for now. The setup clearly has faith in him. Ben Stokes and McCullum at the moment clearly have faith in him. They can see that there's a player in there. They think he's a great guy. A bit like Mark Wood, isn't it? Sometimes when you know a guy offers so much those intangibles off the field and all the rest of it, and just the way he interacts with everybody. They want to persevere with Leach, and I think he's now pushed well ahead of Matt Parkinson and others. Moeen Ali has been talked about coming back. Adil Rashid's been talked about coming back, but Leach stepped up, worked on his game, just blocked out all that noise, and he's gone and performed. Fair play to him. Look forward to see how he does against India. Anderson and Broad, I think the record duo did pretty well. Broadie played all three tests, 12 wickets at 35, economy 3.2. He'll probably want both those numbers to be a little bit lower and the wickets to be a bit higher, but I thought he bowled well. He helped build pressure. Jimmy Anderson missed the third test with a niggle. He took 11 wickets in the series in those two tests, 18.63, an economy of 2.82. Stunning. Why they were dropped, I'll never know. And it seems to be like it never happened. I suppose now the setup's changed, why would they talk about it? But I still want an answer. I still want a better explanation of why Anderson Broad were dropped for the West Indies and treated the way they were. They're back in. They're firing again. The world's good again. Matty Potts, he has been excellent. Debut series for the young fella. Aggressive, sharp, controlled, very, very economical. He is bowling like a player that has been in this England setup for a long time. This does not look like a player who's bowling in his first three test matches. 23-yard, took 14 wickets, an average of 23.29, with an economy of just over 2.5 in a high-scoring series. Exceptional. He's here to stay, simple as that. With a bat, you might want to just work on a few little things because he's not quite done anything yet. I think 4 runs for the series for him. But he'll be very, very pleased with his performances. And he's nailed down that spot for now, hasn't he? Regardless of injuries to others. Jamie Overton was the other man used. Good pace with the ball. Really caught the eye. Obviously, it was magnificent. 97. It was absolutely key to the third test win. We'll need to keep him pressing in county championship, though, to stay involved as the likes of Wokes, Wood, etc. work their way back from injuries. And obviously, Jimmy Anderson. So that's where we were. 3-0 series victory for England. Sensational. I think that's what we need to say. It's just box office cricket. We're seeing full stadiums again. We're seeing fifth day sellouts because of the, well, sellouts, full capacities. It's capturing the imagination, isn't it? Can England do it against India? That's the big question. And that's what we're going to get onto now before we wrap things up. So we have unfinished business, don't we, in the form of a one-off test match against India. The final test, if you remember last summer in September at Old Trafford, it was cancelled following COVID-19 cases in the camp. India flew home. They were 2-1 ahead going into this final test. There's one draw, obviously, and it's a 2-1 lead for India. So England could claw this one back. The test starts on Friday. I'm recording this Tuesday, July the 1st, and we're going to see the completion at long last. Fixture has been moved to Edgbaston, though. Old Trafford, I think they've swapped tests around, so they get a Old Trafford, I believe, getting a South Africa test. So the England squad news came through late yesterday, well, yesterday afternoon, after the test had finished. England confirmed that Sam Billings will retain his spot, as I mentioned earlier, as cover for Folks while we see what happens with him and COVID. Brothers Craig Overton and Jamie Overton, Coverton and Joverton, keep their spots, as does Harry Brook as the backup batsman. No room for Matt Parkinson, though, in this 15-man squad, as they obviously will stick with the man, Jack Leach. So just rattle through the squad for you. Alex Lees, Zach Crawley, Ollie Pope, Joe Root, Johnny Bairstow, Ben Stokes as captain, Ben Folks, Sam Billings, the 2 wicketkeepers, Jack Leach, Matty Potts, Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, Craig Overton, Jamie Overton, and Harry Brook. That's what England looked like. As for India, they've brought over, obviously, as you'd expect, a very strong squad, with the biggest news being the inclusion and recall of Cheteshwar Pujara, who had an absolutely wonderful start to the summer in the county championship with Sussex. He hit 400s along the way. Also, skipper Rohit Sharma is dealing with COVID, so Mayank Agarwal has been a late call-up as cover. If Sharma does not go and KL Rahul does not recover from a groin injury sustained recently and arrive over here as the vice-captain, KL Rahul, big question is going to be who's going to skipper. Jasprit Bumrah was given the vice captaincy of the 2-match test series against Sri Lanka recently for India, but obviously there's a certain Virat Kohli in the setup, and it just does seem fitting. I'd love, obviously, to see Sharma. He's one of the best openers in world cricket, really attacking and positive player. But wouldn't it be lovely to see Virat Kohli get that captaincy just for one more test match and finish off the series that he started as captain last year? We shall see. But let's have a look at the squad, though. Rohit Sharma is captain. KL Rahul is vice-captain, but he's back in India at the moment with a groin injury. Shubman Gill, Virat Kohli, as we said, is in the squad. Shreyas Iyer, Hanumu Vihari, Cheteshwar Pujara, Rishabh Pant, keeper, KS Bharat. He's an uncapped 28-year-old wicketkeeper batsman as well. Got 9 first-class hundreds, averages 37, so it's another decent player just hiding in the background there behind Rishabh Pant. Ravi Jadeja, Ravichandran Ashwin, Shardul Thakur, Mohammad Shami, JJ Bumrah, Mohammad Siraj, Umesh Yadav, and Praz Krishna. apologies for the pronunciation, for Prasad Krishna. He's an uncapped 26-year-old right-arm fast-medium bowler. So as we said, the test gets underway on Friday. Just give me more test cricket at the moment. Give me more Red Bull cricket. It's been amazing. I just want to keep watching it. Coming up after this, we have this one test, don't we, this one-off test. Next test action for England is going to be in August, 17th of August, when it kicks off. A three-match test series against the South Africans. We've got tests at Lord's, Old Trafford and Oval. New Zealand, who are going to be flying the way home shortly, they might not have a test match until about February, I think it is. I'm just checking now. Yeah, to be against England in February, it's ridiculous. England are probably going to have about seven test matches before we play, before New Zealand play their next test match. Something's not quite right with its scheduling. But India are here. We've got a test match against India. After that, we're going to have three T20s, 7th, 9th and 10th of July. So it's coming thick and fast. And then three ODIs, the 12th, 14th and the 17th of July as well. So that gets us up to date. That gets us through England, New Zealand and what a series it's been, certainly for England. That gets us a bit of a prep of looking ahead to India, coming back into town. And we always love it when we see India in England. And obviously the big news about Owen Morgan as well. So we wish Owen Morgan all the best. I'm sure by the time you listen to this, we'll have had the announcement from Morgan and he'll provide a bit more clarity on what he will be continuing to do and what he won't be doing. But yeah, that's where we are at the minute. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for putting up for me talking to you rather than me and Rob having a lovely, funny, whatever conversation, which is what we always do. And I miss that. So hopefully Rob will be back next time. Wish him all well. Like, subscribe, do all those things. Give us a follow on Twitter. At Leaning Edge Pod. Tell us, you know, get in the comments, tell us what you think. Tell us who was your star performers, who was the sneaky star performers, who, what was the reason New Zealand didn't succeed or do well in this test. Always like to see what people have got to say and to interact and have that conversation with you all. So thank you so much. And as Rob says, until next time.
Podcast Network.